The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing all right.
Are you doing okay?
I'm doing okay.
All right, it's Friday show.
I'm all right. It's Friday.
Father's Day weekend.
Yeah, Father's Day weekend. Happy Father's Day, dads.
DTJ.
Yeah. John McNamara, do the job, DTJ.
DTJ. Do the job. It's all I heard my entire life. Dad, you know, I got DTJ.
Do the job. Yep. My dad was a military cop, so I heard, you're under arrest. You have the right to remain silent, young man. I'm so proud to be my father's son. And my hero.
Same
full
here.
Stop. Full stop. And it's always great. And so we hope to all the dads out there, we hope it's going to be a great weekend for you.
I am. There's a tiny bit of me that's a little upset that I've turned out so much like him.
Right. The rebellious you from the teen years and the college years. Yeah. No, I, you know.
But I tell the story that my father, and he gave me great advice, and the advice when I was 14 years old was that you have to be good at more than one thing. And he told me when I was 14, 15 years of age, we hear the debate right now: should I go to college or go to trade school?
Right.
Yep. Should I go to college or should I learn a trade? As you know, it's either or.
Right. John McNamara's answer would be yes.
Yes, both.
That exactly.
That's what it was.
Right, right.
And my grandfather had a machine shop up the street. My grandfather was a machinist and ran his own machine shop, competed with local industries as a one-person operation.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad said, you need to be good at three or four different things if you wish to make it in the new economy. I was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Just so everybody knows, that was 1969.
Wow, yeah.
And my dad said, it's not going to be the way that it is anymore. Technology will change everything. And I said, well, he said, you need to be good at a few things. And I said, well, one or two, three or four. And it was, for example, you need to go to college for something. You need to learn a trade. You need to know how to sell. He was big on you got to get out there. You got to know how to sell, because selling is a part of anything that you do. So that's at least three things. You got to be able to sell. You got to be able to, whatever you're going to do in college, you have to learn a trade. And if you can work in business at the same time.
Right, right.
And so that's what, you know, when I was in college, you know, that was part of, you know, that came from my dad.
Right.
I was working over 50 hours a week at two separate jobs, going to college full time. You just did it. It's what you did. And my father, you know, he told me back then, he said, look, if you continue to do this, you're going to make it. As long as you're willing to work hard and you can organize your time and you stop BSing.
Mm-hmm.
That was directed specifically towards me, by
mm-hmm.
the way.
Right.
he said, then you'll be okay. Now, the one thing is, though, my dad really wanted me to be an engineer.
Mm.
And that was another thing I got from my dad all the time.
Sure.
Be an engineer. So after college, and I was a bill collector and a club DJ in college. Even after college, I went into radio for 9 months. Couldn't make any money. Got out. Became a machinist for the next 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my father still the whole time, be an engineer. Well, then when I went back into radio again, this would have been 83, went back into radio and haven't been out since. but he would still at times when I would, because in radio, I was reading a blog the other day where some guy was let go from his job after 40 years and people were like, that's the radio business. They'll just let you go. It's like, he worked there 40 years.
40 years.
What do you mean?
40 years.
40.
They never gave the guy a chance.
It's like 40 years. Wow. Most of the people that I know in my time when I got into radio, most everybody was in music radio. That's what they were doing.
Right, right.
Everybody was out in their 40s or 50s. I don't know anybody who made it past probably 52 or 53.
Right, because they were smarter.
No, I'm sorry. I know one person. I know one person.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all in different businesses. Most of them got out completely.
Yeah.
Because when you're in music radio, it's not the same. Thank God talk radio came along so us, you know, elderly people could find a place to go.
Of course.
But my father was always saying, be an engineer, get out of this radio thing. And I remember when my father changed. And it wasn't that long ago. Well, at least it doesn't seem like to me, but it actually was 26 years ago.
Hmm.
I'm working at our great station. I'm only working part-time at our great station in Chicago, WLS.
Hmm.
And I'm doing a show. My father's got a steel conference in town.
Okay.
Not a Christopher Steel, by the way. steel industry conference in town.
All right.
So he comes in and they get him a town car or something like that, picked him up at the airport. And he's in the car I was on the radio at that time and my dad knew I was on the radio. And he said, hey, could you turn on? And the guy said, well, in the town car, we're not supposed to turn on talk radio unless it's requested. He goes, yeah, my son's, you know, on WLS. Hmm. So my father turns it on, listens to me all the way in there. He comes to the building, comes up, whatever. I forgot what floor it was on at the time, but comes up there and comes in. My producer gets him a cup of coffee. He sits in for the last 2 hours and watches me do talk radio for the first time ever. We're driving back to my apartment afterwards.
Right.
He looked at me and he just said, you need to stay in this business. Never forget that moment.
I love it.
Great. Great. And I don't care what anybody says, because I used to think if I never got my father's approval in that way, I still would have been okay.
Yeah.
But you really want it.
You know.
You really, I mean, it meant
do.
The world.
I mean, you do.
And now my father and I joke all the time. My father says, aren't you glad that I forced you to do radio?
Well,
and I tell him, I go, look, you weren't wrong. Nobody was wrong in this case. You were trying to tell me a profession that still today, what pays more than any other job in this country after 4 years of college?
Right. Yeah.
You look at the top 10.
Yeah.
I think 9 out of the top 10 are engineering. The other one would be if you're a pharmacist.
Right.
Every other one is engineering of some form. Mm-hmm. So my dad was looking to the future and saying that's what's stable.
Right. And I remember the first day, my first full day in radio. It was my first day. And my car was in the shop. My dad picks me up, this radio station out in the middle of nowhere in a small town. He picks me up, and he's listening to our flagship, WBAP. And on the air is Hal Jay, who hosts the morning show now, but people don't know. Back then, he hosted mornings and afternoons. So he's listening to his favorite show on his favorite station. And he says, you know, the radio thing will be a great thing to do on the side, a great hobby. Maybe you'll have fun at it. But it's probably not a career choice. Maybe you look at the military or something else. And, you know, unless you're, you know, working at a station like this, you know, WBAP, you know, those guys have a career, but. Now, unfortunately, that's a long way away. Years later, well, 22 years later. I'm sorry, no, not 22 years later. It was, it was 12 years later. I was working there. 12 years later. And I've been there for over 22 years. And I remember when I landed the gig. And I went to see my dad, and I took him a coffee mug from WBAP. And I remember handing him this coffee mug that he still has today, the four words he said. Who cares? So what? That's not true. He didn't have to say a word. He did not have to say a word. I mean, I didn't, and I, it happened this way. I mean, it wasn't, my goal wasn't on that day, well, by golly, but I do remember one time being at Six Flags, and I didn't live here, I didn't work here, but it was at the time right across the street from our old studios in Arlington. And I was on a roller coaster, and I saw at the top of that building, WBAP.
The old building, yep.
And I said to someone, man, can you imagine being able to work there? I mean, you know, and so your goal is to, you know, reach success. And, of course, that's success. And it was one of those things. I mean, I wasn't doing it to please my dad, but certainly I wanted to be successful to be like my dad. Mm-hmm. Military, a long military career, very successful. You know, there were things that I was never going to be able to accomplish in terms of him being a hero who fought in two wars and any of that, but he was my hero, and that's what drove me. And I wanted to be the most like him that I could, even though I didn't serve. I did not serve in the military. I thought, well, those are big shoes to fill, and I still won't be able to fill them, but I'm going to fill them to the best that I can. I want to be able to serve a society. I want to be able to give back to a society and do things for people the way my father and countless others have done. And that's
one of the benefits that I didn't see coming of being in talk radio, which really helped solidify the relationship between myself and my father and my mother, but really my father, because we discuss more political things. My mother does once in a while, and she has in the past, but majorly right now, it's still my dad and myself, is the fact that when I became a talk show host at, you know, I was 33. So I was out of town for ages.
Yeah.
And, right. You know, I was doing music radio and all that. Mm-hmm. I think my parents thought I was this, you know, wild person,
mm-hmm.
you know, in music radio, the morning, the DJ and all that kind of stuff. And when I became a talk radio host, it was after about 2 months. Never forget when going over to their house and sitting at their table, and they both look at me and they say, we've been listening to you on the radio. I'm like, oh, God, here we go.
Uh-oh.
You really believe all that stuff? Oh, no, I'm dead.
Oh, man.
And I said, yes. And they're like, oh, our son.
Right, yeah.
Talk radio really helped bring, you know, let my mom and my dad know how I actually thought about the world, what I thought about morality and ethics and everything. And I think they were a little bit surprised.
Yeah.
And
sure.
So that was the benefit of it. Because in my 20s, that would have been in the early 80s. You weren't talking politics the same way that you did today. You just weren't doing it. You didn't communicate in that same way.
Right.
Now, as I said, I get off a late night plane. My father's waiting up for me, and it's like, so what do you think about the whole Boeing thing? 30 seconds after I'm in the door.
It's, yeah.
So. Yeah. But happy Father's Day again. We've taken a couple of moments here today just to, you know, talk about our dads and
when they're worth it. They're worth it.
When we talk about our dads, we hope you think about your dads. And I know how lucky I am to have parents at this age.
Yeah.
Because my dad's 93, mom will soon be 91, and they're in great health and their minds are still tremendous. And so I am blessed. And I didn't know that was going to be the blessings. One of the greatest gifts I've ever received in my life when I was in my 20s and 30s. You don't know that.
Right.
And all of a sudden you live to this age and you see them living to that age and they're healthy and their minds are great and you can communicate with them in this wonderful way and you sit there and you do savor it. I do savor it. I've said this before. I never thought that one of the most favorite things in my life would be sitting at a small restaurant in Clarence Center, New York, with my mom and dad every time I go back, and we sit there and we just have breakfast and we talk and we smile and we laugh. My parents, hanging out with my parents is going to be one of the best things ever in my life. Are you kidding me?
Right.
And it is.
It is. Yeah. It is.
It is.
I can't wait. I'm going to get some time with my parents this weekend, and I'm going to be able to stay the night and actually spend some quality time with them. And I can't wait.
Some of my best friends, they're dads have been dead since they were 18, 19, 20 years of age. I know what a gift I've been given. And I'm glad that I'm glad that they've lived long enough and I'm old enough where I really, really can appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want it to be any other way.
Right. Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
You're pumped for summer, but are your tires? As the temperature outside goes up, so does the importance of tire maintenance. The key to staying on the road this summer is to stay on top of regular tire inspections. If your truck isn't equipped with a tire pressure monitoring system, invest in a quality tire gauge. Check your tire pressure before and after every route while the tires are cold. Measuring tire pressure while they're hot can give an inaccurate reading since tire pressure increases as tires get warmer, especially during use. Pressure levels should match the manufacturer recommended cold PSI level, which you can find on the sidewall of your tires. Catching under or overinflated tires early on is the key to minimizing downtime this summer. Stop into a TA truck service near you for all of your tire service needs today.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. We got talking, but well, it's a Friday show, so we've talked about 100 things today. But we were talking about Pete Buttigieg doubling down on scrapping the Electoral College. We got some interesting discussion on that. A couple of people want to bring that up, so let's go to. Let me see. We go to Joshua in San Antonio, Texas. Joshua, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys?
Real good.
Good. Well, first off, I'm 27 years old, and I was raised, you know, to live by the Constitution. I come from a military family and a military background. And so I understand the importance of the Electoral College and it helping, you know, a lot of the smaller states, including Texas, which is primarily, like a lot of the larger cities are primarily Democrats. And it helps, you know, a lot of the Republicans in those states, you know, be able to have at least a chance to have their candidate in office. And, you know, trying to get rid of it just, it eliminates all of that. And like I said, I was raised to follow the Constitution.
Texas would still be red. If they got, for example, if you got, because we don't use an electoral college, but if you got rid of the Senate, the Republicans still lead the House of Representatives, the House in Texas. It's still majority. There are Republicans that won't in Texas that won't vote for Trump, and that's why it's been as close as it's been. They've done some good work, the Democrats, in getting the vote out, for example, for Beto O'Rourke. But it's still the majority of the population of the state of Texas is still red.
Yeah, and I mean, but this last election, if you look at it, Trump was, in my opinion, the lesser of two evils. So, yeah, of course, I would have voted for him. Unfortunately, I didn't vote in the last election. And, you know, that may have been my biggest mistake.
Well, just make sure you vote in this next election.
Yeah, right. No, thank you, Joshua.
But yeah, no, I get you. Like I said, I'm from San Antonio, and I voted for our current mayor that just got back into office, but I voted for Greg Brockhaus, who barely lost because most of San Antonio didn't even go out and vote. I think it was like close to 120,000 voters went out and actually voted for mayor.
Wow. Thank you, Joshua. We appreciate it.
pockets of civilization, you can listen live on our app, in your app store, or RedEyeRadioShow.com. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here this morning. But very quickly here, because we had mentioned it a little while ago but never got to it, but Sarah Sanders, President Trump's spokeswoman, is leaving the White House. And it, by the way, no surprise, there was a big story yesterday. I looked at it, I'm like, well, this was 9 months ago when it was right. supposed to be gone by the end of next year. But yep. I want to say this. She was invaluable to that organization and to the administration. She kept a sense after, Spicer was a disaster.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just a disaster. And she brought a calmness to the Trump administration that was needed in a very, very manic time.
Yep. And I think she also had the skills very clearly to throw it back at the media that had become challenging in a different way that was really, of course, unique to this president. And I can't imagine that kind of challenge going out every day, but she was very skilled in doing that. That's part of it. I think, again, she ended up debating these people and I'm okay with her doing that because all they wanted to do was debate. They weren't at, we talked about Jim Acosta and all of them who act the same way. They're trying to have a debate on that floor. I don't mind the tough questions. And I really want someone to answer the question honestly. But at the end of it all, it really, well, from the beginning, it was only about a debate. And she held her own in those debates.
Right. You and I had said this a while back, though. We had said, you know, the daily press conferences aren't doing them any good.
Right.
Because it's not where you're just answering questions and keeping people informed. You can do that outside of having a press briefing or a daily press briefing or three times a week press briefing or whatever. And it was becoming a debate between, especially with Acosta. And it was like, when they stopped having them as much, we said, wonder if that was part of the deal.
Mm.
Wonder if she said, look, I won't leave by the end of the year, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do a daily press briefing.
Right.
And I wonder if they finally realized it's not serving their administration at all to do so. I think they did because it's been a long time since they've had one already. The media has been noticing that the last couple of weeks, how long it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot, I saw the article the other day. I forgot what the timeline is since they've actually had one of the briefings. But I think they've looked at it and said, they want a debate. If you want to ask a question, we'll answer it.
Yep.
But we're not going to get into a debate on it, but they wish to get into a debate. And I really think that after the Acosta show that day, that I think they just said, okay, he can come back in. We're just not going to hold him.
Right.
Just not going to do him.
Right. Yep. Because again, it really was about that, not just a debate. He was the activist, and others have been activists, but really he's the prominent one. And you're just having to deal with a protester the whole time. And so what's the point? Someone who is going to commandeer all the mic and rob all of the time from all the other people in that room? What's the point?
I don't know who can replace her. I really don't.
I don't know either.
I guess we shall see.
Yeah. I mean, Ben Shapiro could do it, but he's not going to. Wouldn't you for one day, just one day? Man.
You have to. It's a job I would never want.
No.
Because whether you are a spokesperson for a Democrat or Republican, your job is spin.
Right. Yep.
Your job is spin, and a lot of times it's spinning the BS.
Yeah, sure.
I could never do that job.
No.
Ever.
Nope. Not going to happen. I wouldn't want that job.
In fact, my sister will tell you that even before I became a talk show host, I was always impressed by the art of BS. And this goes back to, we're talking Jimmy Carter, we're talking Reagan. I was always impressed by presidential spokespersons. Mm. I always went, wow. How do they do that?
Yeah. Wow. It is impressive.
Because it almost becomes, it almost becomes the art of spin. And a lot of times it's the art of spin of BS. And you're going around in circles. It's like, whoa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, but, you know, I think she, and of course she had to do that. She had to do the spin. Well, there were, I don't know, a number of times when she was saying one thing and having to explain what the president was saying or tweeting. And I can't imagine how difficult that would have been.
By the way, I don't care who you do it for.
Right.
It's an impossible job.
It really is. This might have been a little more impossibler
I don't
than others.
By the way, I have to ask this question. I don't know who would ever want that job. What kind of a personality do you have to do that job? You remember, you're not promoting what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
You're spinning for whomever is president of the United States.
Yeah,
I could not do that every day. And it doesn't matter the attacks, because remember, the attacks on her were personal.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They became personal at her. So you're not even giving your opinion. The media is being personal with you. You're simply doing and trying to explain what's going on in the administration that you work for, but it's still your fault, but it's not your opinion. I couldn't do it. I could never do it.
You know, I could, if I, of course, had the experience, I could do that at the Pentagon, but I couldn't do it at the White House.
You know what I mean? At the Pentagon, okay, at the Pentagon, I might be able to do it.
We deployed 1,200 troops, and then because it would really be about logistics, really.
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, and so that I could do, because that's not spin. That's, okay, here were the orders from the top, and here's the mission, and here's what we're doing, and the rest we can't talk about.
We got in earlier talking about the Electoral College and taking some calls on it, because Pete Buttigieg talking about how it's undemocratic and really gave I probably insulted junior high school students, an elementary school explanation of why the Electoral College is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we've hit Buttigieg hard because he is the one who the media anointed as the intelligent one. And
right,
we said, okay, let's just see how intelligent he is.
Mm-hmm.
Since they've anointed him, this is the thoughtful guy.
Right.
This is the intelligent guy. This is the guy who ponders things. All right, let's find out if he's actually pondering things or whether he's just wrapped up insane leftist rhetoric in a different package.
Yeah, there you go.
Just get wrapped it in a different way. He's gift-wrapped it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Dustin in Decatur on the Electoral College. Dustin, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Good to talk to you again.
Thanks. What's up?
Hey, happy Father's Day, by the way, too.
Thank you.
So I think I have the argument that kind of shuts down this whole Electoral College thing, because I believe that the Electoral College is the best chance for the Democrats to win. And what I say is, if you eliminate the Electoral College, that opens the door for independents to run. And all they have to do is flood those two most populous areas in the country with as many independents, and they can pick whatever crazy idea they want to promote, and they will break up those areas into about 50 or 30 or however many different voting groups, and that would completely destroy those areas. Because with the Democrats, they don't think logically, they think short-sightedly. And it's basically, they're just going to open the door to break up their little monopoly in these little areas.
Well, the thing is, too, the reason the Founding Fathers wanted the Electoral College, because if you went through a popular vote, as you said, independent candidates would run like crazy, and you'd have presidents winning the presidency of the United States with 18% of the vote. And then what gets people into a revolutionary spirit? When mm-hmm. they feel that they are not being represented.
Right.
It's that simple. That's what gets, you want to get people really angry. We can argue left and right about the day-to-day activities that go on in this country, but when people feel they are not represented, that's why Brexit happened, is because a significant portion of the English people believe that mm-hmm. that it is the bureaucrats and it is people that are not directly representative of Great Britain that are making decisions for Great Britain, and that's the kind of insanity you get. You get rid of the Electoral College, and somebody starts winning the presidency with 18% of the vote, 17% because you've got 25 candidates that are running for the presidency. This ensures, the Electoral College ensures, that at least a major plurality of the country, a major plurality, wants one candidate.
Yep. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Abraham Lincoln win with only like 36% in like 1860?
I'd have to look at those numbers. I don't have those.
I don't have the numbers with me. But that's the point. That's why the Founding Fathers did not want the Electoral College. Great point.
Yeah.
Great
point. Yep. Great stuff. Thank you. This is a different thing. The liberals today want to change the system every time the system doesn't work in their favor. They want to change the system because it really doesn't work in their favor on every level. Look at the Constitution, freedom of speech. Nope, you're going to talk the way we want you to talk. Second Amendment rights. No. You don't need that. Hand me that gun. You don't need that. Everything but the Fifth Amendment.
We started off the show talking about this. The frustrating thing in this day and age about talk radio is, and not just talk radio, but the debate in general, is you're talking to people who are completely ignorant of the Constitution.
Right.
They don't even know. You start throwing these ideas out to people that the last two callers just put out, and a significant portion of America is like, huh? What?
Exactly.
They have no idea why the Electoral College exists. They have no idea why we have a bicameral legislature, why we have a Senate, why each state has two representatives, why Rhode Island has as many representatives in the Senate as California does. They don't understand it, and they don't care to understand it. All they care is they feel that it was unfair that they lost the last election, and all they care about is the results of what they want today.
Right, yeah.
And when you set up a country, you have to look beyond that. You have to say, what keeps the country together? Well, everybody has to have some form of representation, right?
Sure.
They have to feel as if their voice is being heard. We have big states and small states. But as we said initially, the country was set up. It was not set up where the federal government was going to be controlling so many of the things that they control today.
Mm-hmm.
As we said, California, if you want health care, single-payer system, do it.
Right.
If Texas doesn't want it, they don't have to do it. But you got to pay for it.
Yeah. Yep.
And Bernie Sanders yesterday saying, well, people would be delighted to pay more taxes. No, they won't. The reality of it shows they won't. They wouldn't in Vermont. They wouldn't in Colorado. They wouldn't in California.
Yeah. Delighted to pay more.
Uh-huh. Why? Because they had to pay for it. And so it's only the federal government that can borrow money from future generations to give you all the programs that you want.
Right.
And that's why a lot of them want control of the federal government, because they know if they have to pay for it on their own, they'll never have the so-called socialist nirvana that they want. Because it doesn't matter whether it's socialism or capitalism, whatever you want to call it, you got to pay the bills. If you can't pay the bills, if you don't have a productive economy, it all collapses upon itself.
Yep.
You want an example? Venezuela. Another example? Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. It'll be interesting to see what happens over the weekend, what the White House and the Pentagon have to say about Iran, in case people are just waking up right now. I mean, the U.S. military, the Pentagon, released a photo showing a what they say is an Iranian Revolutionary Guard patrol boat actually taking a mine off one of the ships and actually removing it after one of the explosions. And the reason has not yet, we don't know the reason yet. That hasn't been explained, because one would ask, was it an unexploded mine? It didn't go off, and they didn't want that to be used as evidence against them. Mm. But the U.S. military was doing surveillance, as we suspected they probably would. It looks like the surveillance was more post-explosion, but the fact is it seemed like the surveillance was there very quickly. It'll be interesting to see what kind of more, if there's any more visual evidence that the Pentagon releases this weekend.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across the world and America, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, 24-7 podcasting.
That's
anytime
right.
you want. It's
That's
so
right.
convenient for you. Mm-hmm. He's Eric. I'm Gary. In the news today, the U.S. military released a video late Thursday evening that says it shows Iran's Revolutionary Guard removing a mine from a targeted oil tanker hours after the Trump administration claimed that Iran was responsible for an attack on the two oil tankers in the Gulf of Oman. That from the Hill, .com. Here is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
Iran is lashing out because the regime wants our successful maximum pressure campaign lifted. No economic sanctions entitle the Islamic Republic to attack innocent civilians, disrupt global oil markets, and engage in nuclear blackmail. The international community condemns Iran's assault on the freedom of navigation and the targeting of innocent civilians. This is only the latest in a series of attacks instigated by the Islamic Republic of Iran and its surrogates against American and allied interests. And they should be understood in the context of 40 years of unprovoked aggression against freedom-loving nations.
Now, after he made the statement yesterday, the Democrats were quick to jump and say, well, there's no evidence that Iran did it. Then the Central Command released that video that shows the Iran Revolutionary Guard removing a mine. U.S. Central Command spokesperson Captain Bill Urban released a timeline and photographs suggesting that the U.S. military observed Iranian vessels returning to the tanker to retrieve the unexploded mine, the Washington Post reported. At 4:10 p.m. local time, a Iranian Revolutionary Guard patrol boat approached the Courageous and was observed and recorded removing an unexploded limpet mine from the Courageous, Urban said, according to the Post. Reuters noted that such imagery released by CENTCOM is typically difficult to declassify. The news service reported that Thursday's release appeared to signal U.S. efforts to convince the international community that Iran was responsible for the day's attacks on the Courageous and the Front Altair. Iran has denied those allegations.
There was also word from the Associated Press about just before we went on, actually, that the owners of the Courageous said that crew members witnessed something flying through the air, right before the explosion. We don't know what that would be. We have no idea what that means, if anything. But certainly it's notable. And could that mean that there was some kind of RPG maybe that was used? You made the point, and it's true. Certainly the U.S. Navy would know if a missile were launched. So you think of something smaller like an RPG or something like that.
Right.
But I'm guessing we will learn more as the investigation continues.
Yeah, if a missile was launched, we'll know.
Yes,
because they can they can track all of that. And you and I talked about that. We had talked about this yesterday. That if the Fifth Fleet is in the area, then they're monitoring tankers.
Yep.
Now this video was post explosion, so it does that mean that the surveillance happened quickly after the explosion? That U.S. surveillance was there? Do they have anything before? But even if they didn't have, for example, aircraft surveillance around those tankers, they would know if a missile was fired.
Right.
They would absolutely know. So if there was anything like that, we will know about it. I'm assuming, though, you would be safe to assume that Iran would not fire a missile, knowing that that could easily be seen and recorded and then promoted to the international community as to what you're doing. So was it a rocket propel? I'm not saying it wasn't a missile, but we don't know.
Right.
Here at this moment, we're just telling you the possibilities. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about free trade, but yesterday up in Toronto, they experienced fair trade.
There's a new NBA champion, and it's a team from Toronto, Canada. We the North are now we the champions, the Raptors, the 2019 NBA champs.
And that's Kenny Albert from the ABC broadcast. So there you go. So the fair trade is the United States has the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
We got the hockey championship. They have the basketball championship.
Yeah.
So there you go.
But seriously, Canada, give back the championship. It's not real. We don't recognize it. It's in our Constitution that no Canadian teams can have the championship of the NBA.
Okay, I'm going to have to go back and find the video because I'm assuming they went into the locker room and did all that stuff.
I want
to sit there and see if we now have the owner of the Toronto Raptors.
Right. You can't say owner.
There was a story earlier this week where the social justice warriors that by the way, we don't know if Golden State is going to change their name, but the Social Justice Warriors are not a team. but the Social Justice Warriors are big on this thing, and so is the commissioner, to not call NBA owners because of slavery.
Right.
And the rapper Common was speaking out this week on it and said, this is just wrong because nobody owns the players.
Uh-huh.
We had to go through an explanation. We had to go through the dictionary again and explain that just because you don't call owners doesn't mean that they're not owners. Now, they were picking words like managing partner, but then that's, again, that's gender specific.
Right.
So what was the other one? It was managing, and then I forgot what the other. Oh, chairman.
Yeah.
Chairman.
Yeah, chairman. You can't. No.
Chairman, right. Mm-hmm. And again, that's gender specific.
And you can't say chairperson because person has son.
Son in it. Yes, correct.
Yeah, yeah. Look, we don't write the rule book. We're just saying this is by their rule.
But as we had to explain to the rapper and others in the NBA, because you decide not to call them the owner does not make them not the owner. They are still the owner. The relationship between they own the team. They do not own the players. The players, in case this is new. Now, again, a lot of these players have agents, so maybe they don't know that there's even negotiations going on. But you voluntarily agree to sign a contract. You are an employee. They are the employer. The owner does not own the players. The owner owns the team.
How it works. They own the organization.
We seem to have to go back to business 101 social justice warriors.
Let's expand it out. Is there an owner of a privately held company? Well, of course there is. Does the owner own the employees? No. No and no. So it's the insanity of because it wasn't exclusive to the Kaepernick thing, but they wanted it to be, they wanted to sound like these owners have full control or think they have full control and ownership of these individuals who are highly paid, free to go, based on the terms of their contract, maybe, maybe not, free certainly at the very beginning to decide sign whether it, or not they are going to sign it in the first place.
Go anywhere in the world.
And they can travel anywhere they want.
Basketball is an international sport. You can play anywhere in the world and make a decent living.
But it's insane.
You make the best living here.
Yes.
But you can go anywhere to make the living that you wish. But again, the social justice warriors coming up with solutions to situations that aren't a problem.
Yeah. Yep.
And so we just had to make sure we went through that. But it'd be interesting. I'd be interesting to see, because you and I asked that question, especially after the ESPN story last week, that, you know, the president of ESPN saying we're moving away from politics, we're moving away from politics. And you made the great point. Well, maybe sports doesn't want to move. Maybe the people involved in sports don't want to move away from politics. What if that's the case? And then we wondered, would ESPN start calling owners chairman or managing partners?
Exactly. Yeah, the leagues, the teams, the players don't want to move away from all of this political stuff. How's ESPN going to cover it?
All right, the DNC has named the 20 candidates who will appear on the first stage, or on the stage for the first Democratic debate, the 26th and 27th, in Miami. Everybody is in, except the people whose names you've never heard of.
Right, exactly.
It'd be Montana Governor Steve Bullock is out. Alaska Senator Mike Gravel's not in. Miramar, Florida Mayor Wayne Messam is not in. Representative Seth Moulton of Massachusetts is not in. So there you go. Everybody else is in.
Yep. All right. Fine. So what does that leave them with? What? 19 or
20?
No, it's 20 total?
Okay. 20. Yeah.
All right.
20 total.
All right.
So.
That won't take long. Oh, man.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it will be. Well, first of all.
Let me put it this way. It'll be entertaining.
How are they going to
fit? Okay, entertainment is fun.
How are they going to fit?
I don't know.
Because everything will be have to be a huge wide shot. I don't know how they'll do it. I really don't. You know those floating cameras they use in the NFL, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, down over the field. They'll have to use those during the debate. Well, and what if one person is one person on one end is countering the other one?
Okay, here's what it's going to be now. Just so you know,
on the other end.
They're all 20 are not going to be on the same time. All right? The two-night debate hosted by NBC News.
Okay, and we knew MSNBC, that we're planning a two-night event.
And Telemundo will take place on June 26th and 27th.
Oh, okay.
The event will air live across all three networks.
Right.
From 9 to 11 p.m. both nights. 10 candidates at a time will appear on stage, but the lineup for each night has not been determined.
Oh, wait.
Nor has where the candidates will stand.
Mm-hmm.
Both nights will have the same format, NBC News previously announced.
Uh-huh.
It is the first of 12 primary debates the DNC has planned.
12 only because it takes two nights to get it done? Now,
yes.
Because this isn't really a part one and part two. I mean, it's two different debates. Well, and here's the other thing. So you're on the second night, but you want to counter somebody who was on the first night. And many people won't know what the heck you're talking about.
Well, they
about.
Say the format will be the same. Will the questions be the same? So does the second night have an advantage over the first night if it's the same questions?
Because they point out here, they haven't decided and announced who will be on which night or where they will be. Aesthetics. Because you can probably imagine that Vice President Biden, former Vice President, would be in the middle. He's leading. No. No, not in today's world on the left. No. But do you put him to the far left? No. You also don't do that. Oh, man. And what if you're countering, even with just 10, what if you're countering someone on the other end? No, I disagree.
Well, look, I mean, we've said it before. We'll be blunt. We said it with the Republican one.
Mm-hmm.
They're useless.
They are. They are.
They're useless.
Yep.
They're entertaining, mm-hmm. but they're useless.
They go nowhere because of today's social media, they've really lost a lot of the value.
Right. We already know what they think.
Yep.
Look, except for Hickenlooper, from what we know, they're all socialists.
Well, it's an exercise in what kind of gotcha question, soundbite question will the media ask? And on the other side of that, and you mentioned this, I don't know, a few weeks ago, that really the idea is only to create the soundbite for the next day or the next 2 days
right.
for each of them. So it's not to really make a point.
You don't learn anything.
Nope.
There's nothing. They're useless.
If you're going to have a debate,
exercise
have a
and
point.
Futility.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, you're going to have the old Steve Martin.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Great movie. If you're going to, you know, have a point.
But it's
not an exchange of ideas.
It will be entertaining.
Right.
But with Hickenlooper coming out yesterday and again going against socialism, mm-hmm. he's the only one that's promoting anti-socialist ideas.
Right.
I thought they were going to say, no, I'm sorry, you're not a socialist. You're off. That's part of the requirements. You have to be a socialist.
Yeah.
What are they going to argue? Abortion? Everybody agrees.
Right.
Socialism? Everybody but one agrees.
Yep.
Medicare for all? I think they all agree.
Yep.
Free education? Who doesn't agree?
Right.
Now, they disagree on how much cash they want to hand out, but that's just differing on the amounts.
Well, here's
the or how one. To do it.
Here's the other thing. All the other nine that are on the stage with Biden, do you promise to cure cancer?
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, they got it. I would ask that question. Mr. Biden, you said you plan on curing cancer and you haven't moved from that position. We want to ask the rest of the candidates, do you also plan on do you promise to cure
you
cancer?
Promise to cure cancer.
In your first term.
Mayor Pete,
or would it be yes?
You go first. Do you? Yes or no? Do you promise to cure cancer?
Oh, please ask me an electoral college question, will you please?
Exactly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
At a Senate Ag Committee hearing Thursday, several lawmakers said that what farmers need most is
certainty and predictability.
But with trade issues in the air, details of the trade aid package not released, weather continuing to cause planting delays,
we have chaos and unpredictability.
And Agriculture Department Chief Economist Rob Johansson says it does appear we are in
a period of unprecedented uncertainty.
One uncertain factor so far, what the new trade mitigation plan is going to look like. How will it handle prevent planting, for example? Lawmakers pressing Johansson for answers, but
the rule is still undergoing changes at the Office of Management and Budget, so I am somewhat limited in how much details I can go in.
Last year's mitigation payments were based on damage to a crop caused by trade disruptions, so soybean growers got the most. This time, with planting being so late, officials don't want farmers to suddenly plant soybeans in hopes of getting a higher payment.
Particularly when we're sitting on record levels of soybean stocks right now.
So Johansson says the program will likely treat all eligible crops the same and use county production information to set producer payments. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, we had mentioned it earlier this week about the lawsuit of a bakery against Oberlin College for $11 million. That's now been up after punitive damages to $44 million.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was one of their students went in there and shoplifted. And there was a, you know, and they caught the people who did it, but then a dean at Oberlin College was part of apparently libeling the bakery as racist, and there were protests and everything else. They sued the college. The punitive damages awarded, I believe, yesterday of $33 million on top of $11 million, making a total of $44 million.
Yeah. We'll see where that goes from there, because there are caps. Here's your forecast.
Most of the country will be enjoying beautiful spring or even summer-like conditions in the west, where the heat continues. But overall, the nation not inundated with a lot of showers. Good news for the nation's heartland and Mississippi River areas, where flooding has certainly taken its toll. The south and mid-Atlantic will be dry today. Showers will be clearing out in the northeast. Most of the southern plains will be clear, with the exception of some pop-up showers. Scattered light showers in the Intermountain West, then along the west coast. From Oregon down through California, we will be dry. Some scattered light rain in Washington, east of Seattle. Temperatures today will moderate in the west somewhat. We'll still see the 100-degree heat for southern California, for the desert southwest, and mainly portions of western Texas. 90-degree readings will be noted along I-10 from Florida to Texas. There's a look at your Friday national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Bonus Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. This is really an incredible lawsuit here. It'll be interesting to see what happens on appeal to this long term. But this from Lorain County, Ohio. A jury has awarded $33.2 million in punitive damages to Gibson's Bakery in its lawsuit against Oberlin College and Meredith Raimondo, the college's dean of students.
Mm-hmm.
The family business sued the college and its dean of students after protests by students and allegations of racial profiling after a 2016 shoplifting incident in which an Oberlin student tried to use false identification to buy alcohol. On Friday of last week, the same jury awarded Gibson's business and family members more than $11 million in actual or compensatory damages, bringing the total award to over $44 million. The Ohio law limits punitive damages to twice the compensatory amount, which would seem to put the award above the legally permissible amount. We'll see what eventually happens there. This is it. When you see this, and we went through it the other day, we went through it last week. The lawsuit stems from a November 2016 incident. It was a shoplifting incident. A student tried to buy alcohol with a fake ID and shoplift items. He was chased from the store by Allison Gibson, who works there. The two got into an altercation outside, and two more students joined. The students are black, while the Gibsons are white. Following the incident, other students protested, alleging a pattern of racist behavior by the Gibsons, and the college ended its order for baked goods with the store. The students involved in the shoplifting incident all pleaded guilty to misdemeanors and stated their culpability in court, while noting that the Gibsons' reaction was not racially motivated. Apparently, the dean of students was also involved in the protest and handing out leaflets. Hmm. And as I said, this is a small town.
Right.
And you do something like this and you hold these kind of protests and you pull your business from us based on the fact that of the allegation that we are racist. You have destroyed our reputation.
Right.
And our business that has been in business, I think, for what, over 100 years.
Right. And you think about, of course, not just the business itself, but I mean the family, the people, the persons that are attached to that business and their personal reputations. That is a very, very serious thing to do. So a total now of, as it stands now before appeal, $44 million. Wow.
This from the Chronicle, Telegram from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what county it is. So, but Lorain County, Ohio. Just make sure.
Okay.
So, got a lot of friends who live there. That's unbelievable. I mean, that sends a message.
Right.
Because remember, you have at college campuses, you have a reactionary environment where they will go out and you will have members of the college staff. And by the way, you know, Oberlin College said, well, we're not her. It doesn't matter. She works for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the fact that she works for you and promoted it, and the fact that you pulled the business, you pulled business from the bakery, which made news based on the allegations of racism, you did damage to that business. Whoa. Yeah. That has to send a chill down the spine of many, many extremely liberal colleges that are willing to defame and their professors and deans who are willing to blame and libel or defame anybody out there. Maybe you're safe doing it to a public figure. Maybe you're safe if you do it to a governmental organization, for example, the police. Whole different ballgame when you get into the private sector.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And you and people have to know that that kind of action, that kind of behavior can damage people. It can damage individuals and their business and their livelihood. And that's what this case is all about. Because we've become this activist world, this protest world, and we get into the protest. How many protests were the basis of the protest was false?
Oh, all the time.
And when it's targeting someone or their business, that is, again, and you're making certain allegations and labeling them as a certain type of individual, that can be damaging. Because you're saying that they're engaging in certain behavior, that they think a certain way, but beyond that, that they are dangerous individuals and that their business and their property is dangerous. And that's, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, what happens in the appeal process, but very interesting to see that $44 million being awarded.
U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's spokesperson sent a profane tweet to a potential Republican challenger as he ripped him for wanting to debate his boss.
Hmm.
Yo, Rich Valdez, what in the actual F word makes you think you're entitled to debate with AOC? Spokesperson Corbin Trent tweeted Sunday at a conservative talk radio producer who is considering a run against the freshman congresswoman. Mm. So there you go. Then deleted it.
Of course. Who does that thinking it's going to be okay? No problem here.
I don't know. You and I have talked about this all the time on social media. I've never had to delete anything. Well, I've never had to delete anything that, for example, unless I had a typo in it.
Yeah.
And I reposted it. That's the only thing I'd probably ever delete it.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Or I have deleted when I've been on a post and I've commented on something and I realize I've commented on the wrong post.
Oh, sure.
It's like, oh, okay, sure. Deleted and then commented on it because it didn't make sense.
Right, right.
Hey, we're talking about the Toronto Raptors. Why are you bringing up the tanker attack in the Gulf of Oman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that's about it. I've never had to. Then again, you know why? We're expertise. Mm-hmm. We're experts. We have the expertise that nobody has. Well, we do a 5-hour show. Ad lib.
Well, because
every day. We're disciplined.
The liberals constantly put things out that they're eventually ashamed of. I mean, that's what it is behind their. I don't know. I've deleted posts for various reasons, but never because I'm ashamed of it or I'm being called out or because I was wrong or something. No.
You want my favorite story of the day?
No.
You're going to get it anyway.
Okay, fine.
Here is the headline. Men in Black star Tessa Thompson suggest a woker name.
All right.
The Men in Black franchise may get a woke makeover in the future should it persist beyond the latest installment, Men in Black International.
All right.
Speaking with reporters at the New York premiere of the latest film. By the way, when I first saw that headline, I went, what? Why isn't the name woke? Is it black or men? You know, I didn't know which it was going to be.
Right.
Speaking with reporters at the New York premiere of the latest film, Tessa Thompson said the franchise's masculine title will suffice for now.
Okay.
But it may get an update in the future to something more inclusive. I've pitched some ideas like People in Black, but that would be PIB, which sounds like a sandwich. I've pitched Humans in Black, which would be HIB, which sounds like something you don't want to get.
Right.
What she said.
But there's no reason to watch this film. Neither Tommy Lee Jones nor Will Smith will be present for the installment, for this installment of Men in Black.
Yeah, then
no reason to watch it.
I don't have any desire to watch it then.
You can't beat the last one.
Right.
When what's his name was
Josh Brolin.
When Josh Brolin was the young Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
You can't beat that.
No.
I went, it ends here.
I mean, he nailed it.
You can't.
He nailed it, man. He nailed it. That was good.
Hey, Slick.
Yeah, right.
You can't. When they got to that point in the car, when they were driving in the car, and Will Smith's looking like, what the hell ever happened?
Yeah.
What happened to you? You know?
Yeah.
And you know, what happened to you? How did you go from this guy to the guy that you became that I know late, you know, is in the time warp later on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, and he was, Josh Brolin was fantastic. I mean, that was a perfect.
You know, part of me, because all of the Marvel and DC things, especially Marvel and especially Spider-Man, how many times are we going to relaunch this thing? They're doing the reboot. No, stop. They do 1, 2, 3, and then they hire another actor. Where the heck is Tobey Maguire?
No.
What?
No.
What?
Not John Wick 4.
Oh, yeah.
They can't have somebody else.
Well, if they have somebody else, I'm flying to Hollywood. We're going to have a discussion.
Think they would do that? Well, we know that he's in, we know there's going to be a John Wick 4.
Yeah, they announced it.
And he's going to be in it. Could they do that? Could they do a 5 or 6 without him?
Well, we're going to have problems if they don't have John Leguizamo or Lance Reddick or, you know, or...
Jimmy.
Yeah, Jimmy.
I don't know the actor's name, but the Jimmy the cop.
Yeah. Ian McShane, right?
Ian McShane, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you better have everybody. I'm going to protest if they don't have... If one of those is missing. So...
And now the numerous unknown actors,
right,
by the hundreds that get killed.
Yeah. I just saw and by the way, with all the comic book remakes, I like watching action movies and everything else, but more and more it's just animation. I mean, it really is just turning into mostly animation. I'm like, you know, I know I don't expect the guy to actually climb walls. Can you just make it look more genuine? It looks like I'm watching a video game. If I want to watch a video game, I'll just watch a video game, you know. But we can stop with the reboots and
Humans in Black.
Yeah, humans, persons in black, adults in black. No, wait a minute, that could be at a different theater. Never mind.
Well, she said humans,
right? No, that has man.
That has man.
Earthlings.
She said that.
Earthlings. No, because then you're being bigoted towards Martians.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Freightliner Team Run Smart Pro Henry Albert has achieved some very impressive fuel mileage numbers. Henry shares the specs on his truck
and his trailer, starting with what's under the hood.
I'm in a 2018 Cascadia Aero-X. It's powered by the integrated drivetrain Detroit Series 60 DD15, 400 horsepower, 1,750 foot-pounds of torque at 975 RPM, and that's fed into the Detroit DT12 direct drive transmission with a final axle ratio of 2.16 with active loop management, riding on Michelin X1 tires, pulling a fully aerodynamic trailer. The trailer is equipped with a nose cone. It's also equipped with full-length skirts from Fleet Engineers that go completely over the landing gear, completely over the trailer tandem, all the way to the rear bumper. The rain gutter has been plated over, and it's running a Stemco trailer tail. My main run, which is from Charlotte to Laredo, and I'm usually 60,000 to 65,000 pounds, I was averaging over 10 miles a gallon. It was up to 10.1.
To learn more about Henry's fuel mileage achievements, go to teamrunsmart.com. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. Happy Father's Day to you, Eric.
Happy Father's Day to your father.
Happy Father's Day to everybody's fathers out there.
Yep. And happy Father's Day to you. You were a very important and primary role in raising your nephew.
Why is there no Uncle Day? I'm upset about that.
Well, you get Father's Day because
serious Uncle Day.
you did the job. And speaking of doing the job, happy Father's Day to John McNamara. He's also done a great job and still doing that very well.
He's still telling me what to do.
Yep, absolutely. Can't wait to see my dad this weekend. So for all the dads out there, we really hope you have a great, great weekend.
Great job, dads.
Great job, dads.
Great job.
Yes, it's a pleasure being a dad. It's just a joy.
Great moms and great dads, yep. The backbone of our society.
Absolutely. Happy Father's Day.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.